Artorama Podcast.
Hi Tudor, thank you very much for your time in doing this Artorama podcast.
Hi Tiago, thank you for the time that you are allocating as well to this project, and I would also like to say thank you to Jerome Pantalacci and to the Artorama team for this idea and for the kind invitation.
Nice. Thanks to you. And let's start by this conversation. You once mentioned that your collection started with two of your friends who work nowadays in the art field. How they influence you in this beginning, you know?
Yes, I did mention that. It is factually true. This goes back many years, let's say the start of the 2000. The two friends that I mentioned, Mihnea Mircan. Mihnea is a curator and writer. He's the former artistic director of the Extra City Kunsthalle in Antwerp. He's currently a PhD candidate in Monash University in Melbourne, in the curatorial practice, obviously. And Dan Popescu, philosopher and gallerist, the owner of Art Gallery in Bucharest. Both of them were close to me at the time, and at one moment they went on this path of, say, the art world or art scene, and that has attracted me, you know, in their interest zone, interest area. So yes, I can say, and it would be fair to say that if today I'm invited to talk from the position of an art collector, actually representing an art couple, but we'll probably get into that later, it is due positively linked to these two guys that I'm still close to. And actually, the first artwork that we have acquired is a painting. This happened back in 2005. I went to an exhibition which was curated by Mihnea, and it was taking place in Bucharest late 2005 at Galleria Nouă, so like the new gallery, the English translation. That was at the time a contemporary art space under the patronage, I think, of the City Hall, and it was supported by the Swiss Cultural Program in Romania, an important program at the time worth being mentioned. The exhibition was named No Special Incidents Were Reported. This was a critical reaction to the political power lies at the time, not that stopped, and also a renegotiation of the recent past. This was an exhibition of more artists, an artist couple, which was called Duo van der Mixt, formed by Cristian Rusu and Mihai Pope. Cristian continued after 2007 when the duo ended its existence as his art practice. While Mihai Pope, you might know, because he continued in the art scene by setting up in 2005 together with Adrian Genie the now well-reputed gallery Plan B, now in Berlin, at the time opened in Cluj. In the exhibition, other artists were present, Mona Vătămanu and Florin Tudor, Ciprian Mureșan with the painting that I mentioned, which is our first artwork. And Ciprian did that exhibition was a large painting, which was covering the Mineriads topic, whose brutality significantly challenged the problem of public space in Romania. I'll give you a bit of information about the Mineriads. Likely you're not familiar with the term. These were a series of severe violence altercations by coal miners, which came in Bucharest during the 90s. And when I say during the 90s, actually that happened six times starting 1990 and the last time in 1999. The most significant ones, the most brutal, were actually quite at the beginning, in the immediate post-communist time of Romania. So in the 90 and 1991. And this is important because, in fact, miners played a visible role in the Romanian politics, and their protests reflected the interpolitical and the society in the post-revolution Romania. So the work in itself, and I would say that probably the entire exhibition was a reaction to the political environment. So maybe one could call them political work, and that was my first work and ours as a couple now, and then in fact first work, and that was because of how important this topic, the Mineriads, were for me growing up in the post communist period and the effect that they had. Now, Dan Popescu opened Heart Gallery in late 2002. That was second, let's say, private run gallery in Romania. To bring you back in 2005 and give you more flavor of what was happening during the exhibition that Mihnea was making, Heart at the time, because Plan B was just opening, in fact, in 2005, was exhibiting what we know today as the Cluj School. So in that year, an exhibition with Mircea Suciu, Adrian Ghenie, Șerban Savu, Marius Bercea was taking place in Bucharest at Heart. And this exhibition of, again, what we call today the Cluj School, because at the time there was no such, you know, etiquette on this, alongside the most representative young, of course, at the time, artists in Bucharest, Dumitru Gorzo, Ciri Mocanu, or Vlad Nanca. So this was the environment when we started. It was now, looking back, let's say, the midpoint of the post-communist Romania. I think the advantages were already of, you know, transiting from the communist time, were becoming visible. We were outside from those very dark immediate times after the revolution. So this, I suppose, should clarify where we started and maybe how and in what environment.
Oh, amazing. You did an amazing work there, clarifying the background that of what happened during this beginning, you know, with the influence of your friends. And I guess I think it would be nice to say that the collection is a collection that was constructed, built up by you and Janina as well. So your wife. So I think it would be nice if you could tell us more about the decision-making process. As a matter of fact, you never had an advisor, right?
To start with the last part of your question, the simple is no, we never had an advisor. If by that we understand the professional hired to propose choices, I think that is what an advisor is. But that being said, we have a number of people that we keep in high regard, and their input and their views are digested by us, and eventually, I guess, they influence our decision. Now, taking decisions about art is not different from any decision that a couple does. At least in our case, it's not different from other topics on which we take a decision. Of course, we have an individual and we have also common preferences, but we rarely, if not ever, end up acquiring a work or otherwise, you know, supporting an art-related project where we are completely misaligned. So we do work as a couple, taking a decision in this regard. We come up with a preference or a new idea, and if that makes sense for both of us, then it is going to be followed. If not, most probably not, and that's how it works. Now, as time passed, our preferences became more and more aligned, and actually sometimes we test that by comparing list of preferences. That means that, say, after we have visited an art fair or an exhibition, we list the top five works that we like or we would like to collect. And then we compare the lists. And by doing that for many years now, we noticed that more and more our preferences are getting aligned. Hard to say if that's good or bad, or if that's the way it should work for a couple. But it is in our case what is actually happening, and I'd say this is how the decision process is refined. Now, that being covered, I would say that still Janina is closer than myself to mediums such as video or sound or photography. So I argue that I am the traditionalist part of the couple. But then I suppose I'm not that traditionalist either, and it's just a matter of being inclined to a medium or another.
That's nice. I remember you saying that Janina was more focused on the maybe our following question, not right now, because I wanted to, since you mentioned about the fair, I'm going to ask you another thing. But since you were mentioning the fair aspect when you and Janina are in the fair and you compared lists, I just remembered that once you mentioned to me that you feel you are collecting galleries, and I think it would be nice to address this interesting question right now before getting into the Janina, maybe more. Her approach to invisibility, maybe, or to immateriality, or etc.
Yes, we did say that we are collecting galleries, and we actually had a project with Stefano Calegaro. This project was a spontaneous conversation on Facebook Messenger, which then was captured and, without being edited, was published under the name Incorrect Books with Sabot. And the long response to this question of collecting galleries was covered there. The short version of that answer is, first of all, that we recognize the value brought to us by galleries. And when I say that, I'm referring to the fact that the work done by galleries in selecting artists and works of the artist in a world where otherwise it is simply impossible to screen the entire artist practice, especially given to a huge number of artists that have a practice today. So we take the benefit of this screening that is done by gallerists, and we appreciate that is very valuable to us. And in the same time, we have to admit that we are many times actually rather walking fairs to find new galleries to explore, new galleries to follow and eventually to collect. And that means that most of the collection that that we have as of today, and I suppose this will be valid in the future as well, it's linked to a number of galleries that we got to like and to admire, and we follow their program, the artists that they represent, and that's how it works.
Very nice. Galleries will be really happy by that.
Well, it's true.
It's true, yeah, but it's really nice. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about this, and I guess it started with Janina, her maybe inclination towards sound pieces or intangible works, or maybe just trying to get into the theme of invisibility. So I would love to understand as well your learning curve during these years to get to understand and like more performances and intangible pieces, no, like sound pieces, etc.
Tiago, we are all living in the space, and as I said, we started back in 2005. We were attracted by our friends that entered into this world. We professionally are coming from different fields. Jaina is a mathematician and IT architect, and I have studied economics. So they not formed in school with a specific eye on the artwork. So for us, everything was and still is a learning curve. The time that we have allocated to art, probably I think it would be fair to say that has constantly increased since 2005. And especially in the last 10 years, we had more and more the opportunity to visit art events in whatever form or shape, exhibitions, museum exhibitions, art fairs, in many parts of the world. In the same time, that has pushed us to read more, to study, to research, to have more educative encounters or discussions. And it opened our eyes to, let's call it, less traditional or less classic mediums than what we have had as a baggage from old times, that painting or sculpture is the art medium. Probably due to her mathematician formation, Janina was faster accepting or getting attracted to works in mediums such as video or sound or in performance. And the difficult moment, or the important moment, I would say, is that click in moment. The fundamental moment, I would say, is that click when you start accepting, looking at sound work and never questioning why that should be or is accepted in an art event. So typically it is art. It's not easy to explain how that happened, apart from the fact that we have been exposed more and more to different mediums, to different written information or discussions or encounters. And And yes, it happened. And then, indeed, Janina was the one to put on our interest list works such as, I don't know, say the Jan Walder's sound work with Spooky Drums. And it has different advantages. Like, for example, it's bringing a new information to our friends or acquaintances or the family. It's easier to store. It's much more of an element that provides basis for a wider discussion with our friends or acquaintances, as I said, which are not art collectors and tend to question anything. But you know, they kind of got used with any type of painting or installation. Sound work becomes as a very intriguing piece of new information and raises good discussions about how that works.
That's really nice. I think it would be interesting to talk about specific works of the collection. And since you mentioned Ian, for example, that you have a sound piece by him, or Yael, or Radu, and Miklos as well, I think are interesting works of the collection that you could mention. Tell us more, you know, because they all play with this idea of the invisibility, you know, in a way.
In a way. And before doing that, Tiago, I would like to get into this invisibility topic. Because there are many facets you are raising, or Artorama is raising the invisibility or intangibility element. And I was wondering, and I have discussed, we have discussed, myself and Jaina, this some hours. And I think that it's worth being explored. So what is it, the invisibility? Is it about the tactility? Because then I would say the response is that an invisible work in our collection is a sound work. Yeah, that would be a great example. It's no doubt about zero tactility of the work. I suppose also Yael's corner light work would fit very well here. We talk about a light object, which in itself, in the eyes of the viewer, has no other meaning than a lightning object. However, once you take a picture of this object installed, you know, in a plain vanilla wall, because of the design of the object, the picture would reveal a corner on which the object is installed. So that's why I would say that it is about the tactility of the actual work. Because that work can only be revealed through photography, then it would also easily be classified here. But then if we continue to explore the term invisibility, it could also be conceptual artwork. No? And when I say conceptual art, I'm specifically referring to the situation where the object has also a story which is completely detached from the object. But you, as a viewer, you need to know the story for the work to be classified as art. And I would say that in this category, we would probably best classify the anonymous artwork of Goran Trbulja. We can get into details of that work later on. As before that, I would like to touch upon the third way to look at for us to look at this invisibility, and that would be when we actually refer or we talk about the symbols that are embedded in the artworks. And these symbols are actually the viewer, and of course the developments of those symbols is different because of, say, what we call the beholder's share of our ability to recognize the references or to recognize the situation described or otherwise to decipher that symbol. Now, if this is what we refer at when we talk about invisible work, this, more exactly, the situation when there is a good body of work which is embedded in the object. However, it is embedded by means of a symbol that needs to be deciphered. Then we have a completely different category of works. And I would say that in the case of our collection, that category would be far wider than the first one, which is plain vanilla invisible. Or the second category, I would call them, say, conceptual art with the story being detached from the object. This third category would be the larger one. I think it's a discussion in itself, sensible to the fact that the definition may not be very clear. Suppose it could become in time. Now, I would like to, because you mentioned few works from our collection, and
but I think there is the sense of if you understand invisibility, because it depends on the collector for sure, the word is super broad. If you understand that any of the categories, as you mentioned, I think it was the third one, is more relevant to the collection that you have, and I think for this one is Goran. I guess we could address this specific one, because Goran's work is brilliant. You know, the way that museums had to decide to keep it or not keep it. I mean, it's quite fascinating.
Yeah, I think it would worth going maybe through any of the categories. Indeed, Goran Trbulyak's practice, this work, but not only with this work, the anonymous artist, was quite fascinating. He took the conceptual art concept to an extreme where actually the artist disappears as well and disappears behind the anonymous. The fact in itself that this work has been sent to different entities in the world is part of that practice, and yeah, I think it marks superbly the practice of Goran Trbulja. If we then go to this category of works that develop or allow you to develop a significant invisible part, I would open up the subject here, for example, about the study for transcription, Gray. This is done or was done by Radu Comșa. He's a Romanian artist, based in Cluj. The works that we are talking about are concrete casts with elements of color, and I'll get into that later, but also elements of sculpture, maybe, or at least of portfolio. Now, what Comsha does in this series is to work with three elements, which he was very passionate, or probably is still very passionate about. But at the time, they were so strong that they were guiding the practice. And those were the modernist architecture, the concrete poetry, and the atonal music. Now, these are works which look very much physical, but the message that the beholder has a chance to develop goes into transcribing poetry into sound and into architectural shapes. And this is done simply in a cast concrete plate, which he ultimately calls concrete painting. Now, his tools in this case might not be the usual painter's tools. His sources of inspiration might belong to more the conceptual sphere, which brings us back to that category that I mentioned. But the point I'm trying to make here is that we talk about an art object, a physical presence, which has its beauty, its attractive visually. However, it encapsulates quite a large synthesis of three quite different subjects: the concrete poetry, the atonal music, and the modern architecture. And to point out specifically, the works deal with a number of projects of Corbusier that have never been materialized into reality. And yes, I would say that in the same category of, you know, a borderline in the three groups that we were discussing earlier on is also the work of Miklós Onuksan. It's photo documentation, in fact, of an action. This took place back in 1998. The work is named Commemoration. And the photo documentation shows or reveals a salt plate, which is inscribed with the text, "The Grateful Posterity," and that salt plate is consumed by ships. It's consumed by ships, a very natural behavior of the animal. And it could be associated with the work done by Mike Kelly, and we discussed about that. However, the association is mainly in given by, you know, the salt medium and the use of animals. I don't think we can find anything else to put the works one along the other. What Miklós was exploring here is behavior that we have, the relationship that we have with monuments. We talk here about a monument because it is a plate, it is inscribed, a grateful posterity. Nonetheless, it's a monument that can not be associated with anybody in particular. Very likely it is meant not to be associated with anybody in particular because it's not about a hero or otherwise someone that captured the eyes of the society. And if we look back into the action in itself, it's a different type of monument. It's not a monument that we are creating to express the link between our past and our future. which is in fact the normal use of a monument, which clarifies that we live because we have a past, and we assume and we believe and we form our decisions as a society, assuming that our future will be driven by that past in a very positive manner. What we are looking here is in a practice that explores a monument that has no connection with the past. It is maybe a monument of the present. It is consumed in the present. And I think it's a beautiful discussion about how we connect, in fact, our future with whatever we are, and how we deal with this little area, or maybe huge area, which falls between the past and the future, and it's not the present, but it's just a period of time which we deal less with, because it doesn't fall into any of the big categories.
Beautiful.
Tiago, I hope that this covered well your areas of interest.
Yes, you did. But you did. We explored a lot and pretty well the invisibility. And I want to thank you. It was wonderful talking to you. And thank you again for making your collection visible to us.
Thank you, Tiago. That's actually very funny that we call that making the collection visible. And I admire humor. Thank you. Thank you once again. And good luck. Good luck to you and all the projects. Of course, good luck to Artorama and to all of us with the next step.
That's it. Thank you, Tudor.
Thanks.
Artorama Podcast.